Today we really get to start off the first day of Shia by saying, last year we spoke about the following. I think this is the first time in all of our year that we're actually at part two of the last year. For those who were with us in the past, we're just going to continue right where we left off. Those who were not with us, we'll catch up really, really quickly. We're talking about Mavrasio, and then maybe even for some of the old timers, maybe we need to drop a chazara just to put us back into perspective. The numbers should feel left out. So we are left off pretty much in the middle of the Malacha Vishal. We've been going along just to say that Malacha, just give you a little bit of an idea as to pace and go. We started with Zereah, and we're only up to ninth Malacha, and there's our second year. So it's taking us a while. But we're right smack in the middle of the Malacha Vishal. And one of the basic principles that we're about to begin in terms of Vishal is a principle called Ein Vishal Ach Vishal. Whereas last year, the last couple of weeks, when we started Vishal, we focused a little bit more on what Bishul is, in the sense of, does Bishul involve a fire? Does Bishul involve a klirisha, a cliche, anything of that nature? Now we're going to talk a little bit more about what Bishul is not. It was an Ein Bishul Acham Bishul. Once something was already cooked, then it is no longer subject to subsequent cooking. By the time we finish the sugya of Ein Bishul Acham Bishul, we'll realize that there may be more exceptions to the rule of Ein Bishul Acham Bishul than the rule itself. Let's start at least with the very basics. Let's start with the ABCs of the rule of Ein Bishul Acham Bishul. So that, even that phrase, Ein Bishul Ach Bishul, as popular a phrase as it is, happens not to appear in the Gemara. It's not in Gemara explicitly that phrase, Ein Bishul Ach Bishul. The Mishnah, in the very end of Masechta Shabbos, describes it, illustrates it, and it's the phrase that the Rishonim coined to describe this halacha that appears in the Mishnah. And we start with the first of the Marva Kamos in the Mishnah, Kufna and Hammer Days. Mishnah tells us, Kol Shabba B'Cham in the Erev Shabbos, Shoen Osa B'Cham in the Shabbos. Anything that had been in hot water from before Shabbos, we're assuming that that phrase means it was cooked. That's an assumption. We'll be moving that assumption right now. Anything that was, quote-unquote, cooked from before Shabbos, you are permitted to re-soak it in hot water on Shabbos. So it sounds like what the Mishnah is saying, if it was already cooked, because we're translating Baba Chav into meaning this Bashel, anything that was already cooked for before Shabbos is permitted to, in a sense, recook it on Shabbos itself. Thus, Klal, Ein Bishul Acha Bishul. But, Kol Shalom Baba Chav in Erev Shabbos, anything that was not put into hot water from before Shabbos, then, in contrast, you would not be permitted to soak it on Shabbos because it hasn't yet been cooked. But the Mishnah does permit you to do other things with that. And that's a lot of what we spoke about in last year about creation and Rishani and pouring, etc. We're not going to focus so much on that. We're going to focus more on the beginning of the Mishnah, which is tantamount to saying, Ein Bishul Acha Bishul. So comes the Gemara and asks somewhat of a startling question, down to the end of that first Bar Mochum. The Gemara asks, Kigon Nai, what's an example of something that would be subject to this rule of Ein Bishul Acha Bishul? So it's a very strange question. For example, a potato, an egg, a piece of meat, a chicken, Mr. Wise, whatever she cooks for Friday afternoon. What's an example? And what's even more strange, the mother's an answer. I'm a South, some kind of goat, but this is Rabbi Abba. Like the kind of goat, like the chicken that Rabbi Abba used to cook, and the Gemara describes that he used to cook it a few times, first he cooked it before Shabbos. That's a whole other McGill about the chicken of Rabbi Abba. Very strange question, very strange answer. We'll see as we go on what the possible significance of that answer is. The Kama de Gemara is the second of the Mamakamas, which at first glance is not even talking about a sugya of Bishul, and at least the way some Rishonim learned Pshat the second of the Mamakamas, the Gemara is making a startling statement about Bishul, which is going to be very significant for us, in terms of putting the brakes on this rule of Bishul Acha Bishul. The Gemara starting out appears not even to be addressing the Bishul. Eventually we're going to come back and see how this whole thing connects back to the first of the Mamakamos. Let's just take it aside to the second of the Mamakamos. The Gemara raises the question, Amar Rabba, Yitnei, Neyma Amru, Ein Tomnin, the Dabra Mosif Heba, Vafilu B'Biyod Yom, Yizera Shema Yatin Beremet, Sheesh Bagacheles. So the Gemara asks a double question. We only have half, I think we're supposed to be Chuli over here, but there's a double question that the Gemara is raising. The Gemara is discussing about the prohibition of what's called hatmana. We haven't yet really spoken about hatmana. Hatmana means as follows. I take food and I totally wrap it up, either on Erev Shabbos or on Shabbos. I completely surround the food to try to keep it either warmer or to perhaps to retain its heat. You have different gradations. We'll talk about it as we go on in terms of Hatmana. And there's some kind of a problem involved in Hatmana. The favorite that Hatmana is prohibited, we say it in the Mishnah, it's the Met Talmud or Met Talmud. We even refer to it in the Mishnah, it's the Met Malikin. Speak about some kind of a prohibition of Atmana, but it's unclear from all the Mishnahs, the whole parak and shaft about Atmana, it's unclear from the Mishnahs what in the world is wrong with Atmana. You're taking food and you're wrapping it up in shams. What could possibly be wrong? Presumably the food is cooked already, so what could possibly go wrong? So to make matters even more complicated, the Gemara discusses two types of Atmana. There's Atmana that's done on Shabbos, and then there's Hatmana that is done on Erev Shabbos. So the Gemara says that Hatmana that's done on Shabbos is more stricter than Hatmana of Erev Shabbos. Hatmana that's done on Shabbos is also under all circumstances, even if it's not actually adding heat, even if it's merely maintaining heat. Whereas Hatmana that's done on Erev Shabbos is going to be more lenient, because this one being done on Erev Shabbos, it's only going to be prohibited if it's what's called a Dover Hamosif Hevel. So let's start backwards. We'll start with Hatmana on Erev Shabbos. Why is that a problem? So that's what the Gemara answered. Gezer shel yad in beremet sheyesh bo gechelas, because we are afraid that if you take a food and you wrap it up with something that makes it hotter, in the days of Chazal, the normal thing to make things hotter was like a bucket full of coals or something. That would be the normal way to do Atmana. So we're afraid if you let you go ahead and take a pot of food and wrap it up in something that makes it hotter on Friday, next thing you know, you're going to know is you're going to wrap it up in coals, and that's a disaster. So if you wrap something up in coals on Friday afternoon, next thing you know, it's Friday night, you're going to start to stir the coals. So it all falls onto this general gezeirah of gezeirah shemayatmin beremet yesh b'gechelas. You may come to cover it up with coals, which in turn is going to lead you to be gezeirah shemichat b'gecholim. So I understand why it's prohibited to do Hatmana on Erev Shabbos with something which is very, very hot. That I can understand. Gezeirah shemichat b'gecholim. But what is wrong with doing Hatmana on Friday night with something which is not all that hot? I want to take a pot of food, a pot of soup off the fire, and wrap it up in a towel. That could get any hotter for me in the towel. The towel is merely going to retain its heat, and the Mishnah says that's also a problem. What could possibly be wrong with that? So, what could possibly be wrong? So, Rashi, take a look at Rashi, the second Maamar Kamos. So, Rashi says on the third line, Rashi explains that the reason why Hatmana on Shabbos itself is also, even in a situation when it's not even getting hotter, is because the gezeira, you may find your pot has cooled off a little bit, and you could end up reheating it. So this is the scenario according to Rashi. It's Friday night, you take your soup off the fire. I don't want to put it into coal. I don't want to make it boiling hot. I want to just wrap it up. I'm going out to the sukkah. I want to make sure my pot is still a little bit warm. I want to take some towels and throw it around it. What could possibly go wrong? What are you going to do? Rashi says, here's what's going to happen. If you start to wrap it up in towels, that shows that I want to keep it as warm as possible, I may notice it's not so warm anymore. Doctor tries to cool off. And I may make a terrible mistake. I may go ahead and be Yarsi Chena. I may go ahead and boil it up again and put it back under the fire, which would be a disaster. It won't be such a disaster. The Nimsa Mavashal B'Shabbos. It'll turn out that I'm cooking on Shabbos. Rashi is explaining the reason why you can't do Hatmana on Shabbos itself, even with towels, even with things which are not all that hot, has nothing to do with Shem Yichat and Gizbe'gichom. Has nothing to do with stirring coals. It has to do with the Isser of Bishol. It's back to our sugya. There's a Gezeirah and the Rabbanan. Don't wrap things up on Shabbos. Don't wrap that pot of soup up on Shabbos, even though it's not going to get all that hot. Because if you start to get careful and start to get very, very nervous about wrapping up food, the next thing you know is you're nimsa of Avashal B'Shabbos. So the Rashi is Pilitzvah. The Rashi is very, very difficult. The nimsa of Avashal B'Shabbos, what happened to the Mishnah of Kufman Bama Vedic? What did the Mishnah just say? Ein Bishalach HaBishol. We're talking about a pot of soup, filled with a pot of chillin on Shabbos morning. The guy's got a pot of chillin, and he wants to wrap it up in a towel. I remember once we had a yeshiva bracha, so we had a chillin being cooked across the street. We were moving around pots and carrying. And somebody decided we don't want the chillin pot to cool down, when they started wrapping towels around the shofar. So I said, no, you can't do that. They looked at me like I was crazy. What's wrong? So that's called hatmana. And what's wrong? What's wrong? They didn't ask me the next question. I ain't bishul achabishul. That's the next question. I didn't even ask him about shalom shabbos. What happened to ain't bishul achabishul? So clearly, what Rashi is telling us is that that absolute rule that we thought was shalom shabbos, they called ain't bishul achabishul. Absolute, no question there. That's the principle. Ain't bishul achabishul. It's not as true as we thought it was. There may be some important exceptions to that rule. What possible exceptions to that rule could there be? Why should one think that sometimes yesh bishul achabishul, sometimes ain't bishul achabishul? What's it all about? Maybe we have to go back to the first of the Bible comes again, go back to that cryptic line in the Gemara, and the Gemara asked, Kigamai, and we wanted to know why the Gemara said Kigamai. Everything is Ein Bishul Achabishul. The answer is no. Not everything is Ein Bishul Achabishul. Certain things are subject to the leniency of Ein Bishul Achabishul, and certain things are not. Which ones are and which ones are not? Don't try to go to the Abba. That's a good example. What was try to go to the Abba? Was a good dry piece of chicken. A good dry piece of kugel, a good dry shulin, depending on your consistency of your chot. It's best Shabbos, so one of, I was trying to dish out some of the shulin for one of my kids. So my youngest daughter said to me, I want the liquidy part of the shulin. Some women would get insulted. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, depending on what your view on chot is. So I said, wow, you think that shulin is another lach? Seven. She didn't exactly appreciate the significance of that, but I had the wheel turning about this week's year. So, it's quite possible, according to Rashi, the following distinction, a very, very important distinction. When do we say Ein Bishul Achabishul? That makes sense. When you're talking about a dry piece of chicken, a dry piece of meat, a dry piece of kugel, something that once it was cooked first time, it's over, I'm finished. I cool down and you want to throw back on the fire. What's the difference between a cold piece of chicken and a hot piece of chicken? It tastes a little better, but the same basic thing. And the goal for Rabbi Abba, that's what we say, Ein Bishul Achabishul. But when you have something like a soup, you have something like a gravy, something like a liquid, something like rather liquidy chillers, and then there's a tremendous difference between when it's eaten cold or when it's eaten reheated again. When you reheat soup, you're not reheating soup, you're cooking soup. The original bishul was this bishul was this batel. The bishul was this batel when it cools down. And now when you reheat it again, you're not just reheating food, you are cooking food from scratch. As Rashi says, ultimately, we've been into the Vashem. So it could be that the answer to this apparent contradiction, on the one hand, the Mishnah in Kuf Mem Hei says, Ein Bishul Achabishul. On the other hand, in the Sugya of Hatmana, Rashi throws in the possibility of the Nimtzum of Vashem Shabbos. It's quite possible that the answer is very simple. One's talking about solid food, I'm talking about liquid food. A solid food, Ein Bishul Achabishul. A liquid food, Yesh Bishul Achabishul. Now, it's not muchach to say this. You don't have to say this. That's Rashi, you probably do. But other Bishonim could possibly learn differently. There's some Bishonim who suggest that maybe the fear of Hatmana is not the Nimtzum of Vashel B'Shabbos. You might have said Nimtzum of Vashel B'Shabbos. Rashi stuck in those words, Nimtzum of Vashel B'Shabbos. Maybe one could say as follows. The person comes to take his pot of soup off the fire Friday night, and he sees that it's not as hot as he wanted it to be, and he goes ahead and he puts it back on Shabbos. We're not worried about him from the Vashel to Shabbos. Don't you know Ein Bishul Achabishul? You know what we're worried about? He's going to put it back on what? There's no fire. The fire's going out already. What's he going to start to do? He's going to have to light another fire in order to get this soup to, I don't mean it when I say to recook, because maybe Ein Bishul Achabishul, but maybe we have the wrong malacha. We thought we're learning Malachas Bishul. Maybe we're learning the wrong Malacha. We should go to be learning Malachas Hagara, Malacha of lighting a fire. So just because there's a fear that something wrong is going to happen in the Raisa, maybe we're focusing on the wrong Malacha. So from the Gemara itself, on Daf Lamed Aleph, there's no proof that there's any exception to the rule of Ein Bishul Achabishul. We don't know why Rabbi Abba's chicken was singled out, and any other reasons why Rabbi Abba's chicken was singled out. But this distinction between the Malach versus the Yabesh is suggested by the Rishonim, specifically within Das Rashi, because the Rashi's three magic words are in the Vashem B'Shabbos. Now again, it's a big chiddush what Rashi is saying, but it's not impossible to understand. We can conceptually understand why solids and liquids are different. Solids don't lend themselves to being recooked halachically, whereas liquids clearly do. What do the other Rishonim have to say about this topic? We're building a whole case on a three-word, yes, one, and Rashi. What do other Rishonim have to say? So comes the Ran on the Shchof Beis and Alf Adap Yerif, and the third of the Mamakamot. The Ran quotes a fascinating statement from Rabbeinu Yona, fascinating on two fronts, fascinating because of the severity that Rabbeinu Yona gives this particular statement, and number two, it's interesting because this Rabbeinu Yona happens to appear in Sefer Shari Tshuva as well. I guess a little bit of Yadam of Chesh El. Nobody says we don't want Musar in Kalabok yet. So in Sefer Shari Tshuva, so besides telling you that you have to do mitzvahs and everything, so at the end of Shari Tshuva, so he gives you a list of a lot of things that people are not so careful about. So that's just the regular, you know, don't speak Lashon Hara, daven better, you learn a little more, you know, be nice with you. The regular Musar stuff. But it gives you a couple of lomish things also. He writes a certain things that people just are not as medactic in mitzvahs as they should be, and he's going to give you a list of some of them. Here's one of them. By the time we finish, we're not even sure that we should be medactic in this. So let's see what at least what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying. The Rav Rabbeinu Yonah is across the Loshon Hazeh. Omach Sheila Gedola, Sheila Nichshol, like the Haftar of Yom Kippur. A real Nichshol, Neged Ani. It's a tremendous stumbling block that people are not careful about. Tachas Yat Tasa'am. Not everybody. Some people are not careful about the following. So, sounds like there's going to be some tremendous Musar is going to tell us. Listen to what people are not careful about. Shetomnin kumkum shamayim chamin. That people take a bottle, a jug of the hot water, and they leave it in a hot place on Friday afternoon, keep it warm, okay, so far so good. And what's the point of keeping this hot water? Litei mesuch ha-kedera b'shabes, shetavshu mitstamek. Because what do they use this hot water for? If every once in a while on Friday night they realize that the food that they're cooking, the children, is drying out, they want to have access to be able to for hot water, to be able to pull hot water into the children. But I guarantee everyone in your life does this also. I mean, at least in theory, they have a pot of children sitting there, and they always know in the back of their mind, we have an urn, we have the old stuff, we have a chinip, we have some kind of a source of hot water, because we know that sometimes the children get a little bit too dried up. So this is not a new problem. This goes back to the days of Rabbeinu Yonah. So on the one hand, we have a pot of children sitting around waiting to potentially dry up. And we have our pot of, we have our kumkum of water. We have our urn of water all ready to solve the problem. And what could go wrong? Upanim, he says, she'echad ein yatzel letizbo, ge'acher yatzel letizbo. Every once in a while, let's make it an easy scenario, the water may not be so hot. Maybe the water is not sitting much, so close up to the fire. It's not as hot as we would like it to be. And that water is dipped beneath the point of the yad, so let us know. Remember from last year, we spoke a lot about yad, so let us know. Basically, it's the temperature that if I even touch it, yad, so let us know, if I touch it, I pull my hand away because it's too hot. That shear of yad, so let us know, is the point where we say that liquids are considered to be cooked. Any liquid under the point of the yatzah letizbo, that's not hand-to-mouth cooking of liquid. How much does that practically translate to? Depends on what you ask. Somewhere in approximately the 110 area. I think we spoke about this last year, not that you should ever see any, but at what point do you just start coming with burns of hot water? A little bit past that, around there? Okay, so about 110, so that's approximately yatzah letizbo. I think we mentioned last year about how in the world the Tosafot came up with these numbers. Comes to 110, 113, 115. Where does this verse come from? So it came from a rather fascinating, kind of a backwards kind of an experiment. The last thing you want to do, the Gemara says there are two ways to figure out yes or no. Either you can figure out by see how much you have to pull your hand away, or the Gemara says that it's enough to scorch the very soft skin of a baby's stomach. It's approximately the same shear. It's obviously the second experiment we're not going to do, and even the first experiment is very, very shaky whether you can do it. Some say you can only experiment on someone who's not expecting that the water is hot. If I'm expecting the water is hot, then I can tolerate it to a higher degree. So you have to be really, really not nice and try to experiment with someone who's supposed to. I guess it's the opposite of the ice challenge. This would be the yes, the letters vote challenge. So it's going to be hard to figure out how to do this practically. So another answer is given. It's based on the Gemara, the beginning with Sechet Chulin, speaks about how the base of Shechita, you're going to see a Shechita, the area gets hot. You notice it. You've seen a Shechita. You can see it's probably steaming a little bit, that area of the blood is coming out. So the Gemara talks about whether that area is reaches the point that you have to let us blow out. So the folks can start to make a cheshbon, apparently, why this is true, maybe some veterinarians over here, but apparently a duck, I think, has the highest body temperature. Does anyone know that? I'm going to say it whether anyone argues with me or not. I think that's what I've read in the book. that a duck apparently has the highest body temperature of all the regular kosher birds. And so its blood is going to be a little bit hotter when you shecht it. And the Gemara says that we talk that the chometz hashchit is not yet to let us know. No matter what happens when you shecht a bird or an animal, it will never quite reach the point that you have to let us know. So then the postman say, well, let's figure out, let's stick a thermometer into a duck's blood, as it's under shechita, and figure out how it is, so we know we haven't yet reached yet to let us know. Wait, not so fast, the postman say. I'll say that it's impossible to ever reach out to let us know in the base of shechita. What if the duck has a bad cold? What if the duck has the flu? The duck said, again, I never experimented with trying to take temperature of a duck, but the duck came out, it's an altruistic. If the duck has fever, it's a little bit higher. So you got to get a good sick duck. You got to first get a duck that's running higher. I don't know at what point we would call the doctor for the duck, but you got your duck running 109 temperature or something. So the folks can point out that even the sick duck, by the time if they're running too high, it will be a dead duck. But if it's even the sickest of the sickest ducks, they'll never get past 110 or something, whatever the cheshbon is on. Oh, it must be that that's not yet quite yet to let us know. So a rather fascinating way of reaching a conclusion about the number yet to let us know. And one can imagine why there's a slight discrepancy in different both of you as to, I guess, different ducks were sicker in different places.
But it can be 10 degrees higher if it never reaches.
No. That's not right. We don't know for certain what it is. We know for certain what it's not. You're right. It's an inverse, reverse, kind of whatever it's called. We could just prove that if you're only heating something to 109, you're still okay. At 110, we don't know. We're already in. It's like Master. Mara said that Master, if you mix flour and water, it doesn't become chomet at 18 minutes exactly. The Gemara says that until 18 minutes, you don't have to worry about it. At 18 minutes, then you're on your own. So that's why, of course, we have to stop before 18 minutes. So we have to stop before we get to the sick duck's high fever. Anyway, getting back to the story. So Ben Yona says, you may end up having two containers of water, two containers on the fire. One is boiling hot, the chillin', and the other, the water is not so hot. What's going to happen? And you're going to want to, and you're going to wake up Shabbos morning and notice your chillin's drying out, so you're going to quickly run to the container of hot water and pour it into the chillin. Little do you know that container, quote unquote, hot water, is not halakhically hot water. It's only at 107 degrees. And you're pouring that water into the chillin at 150 degrees, the nimtzum of ashlim b'Shabbos. And it turns out that you're cooking on Shabbos. Now that statement of Rabbi Yona is really not such a big finish. That's 100% right. If you have water that never reached that to let us know, that's a very, very serious problem on Shabbos. That's not ein bishul lacha bishul. That's bishul mamash. That's bishul deraisa. If I'm not mistaken, the last sugya that we learned, and the checking by Bergs, he's the official, I guess, the official secretary of this year, so we noticed that last sugya that we learned the last week in June, and it was the first week in July even, we pointed out that the pasha that Dvarim is, that bishul on water is an absolute deraisa. Nobody would argue with that. Maybe. We pointed out that maybe one could argue, maybe bishul on water is only derabanan because the water is drinkable before it's cooked. But we said that pasha is not true. The Rambam is the favorite. That there's bishul deraisa in water. But we assume Galishim Suffolk is bishul deraisa in water. So Rabbi Yona says, developing Shartuva, he's screaming you in the shell. He's saying, make sure when you pour your water out of your urn into your chillin pot, make sure that the water has reached the point that you have to let us know. If that's all Rabbi Yona would have said, we wouldn't be. I mean, it's a nice tichotari from Rabbi Yona, but it's not so exciting about initial lachabishal. But now he gets even more exciting. Bafilim shnem yatzel let us know. What if they're both yatzel let us know? Both yatzel let us know. No brain. What's the shayla? It's cooked and this is cooked. I can't mix two cooked foods together. What's the problem? E come on the yama be yushalmi. E roi enikikli rishon. Some of you may remember back to when we first started Bishul, back in May, in early June, where we quoted the view of the Rishalmi. There's one day in the Rishalmi that says that Bishul only applies when it's inside the Klirishon. Klirishon meaning the pot that's on the fire. Once the contents of the Klirishon exit the Klirishon, even though they haven't landed in any subsequent Kli, just the fact they're in the state of Eroi, they're limbo, they're in the pouring state, it no longer has the status of Klirishon, and therefore it loses its status of being able to cook, and for our purposes, it loses its status of being cooked. So now, according to Rabbi Yona, when I take my tea kettle, so to say, and I pour water out of my tea kettle, everything has to let us know. Cold madness in the tea kettle is called cooked. Once it exits the tea kettle, it's always cooked. The cooking is this batil. It's 180 degrees, and it's not called cooked, because once it exits the Klirishon, It's considered to be halachically done, finished. It's ready, it's cooled down. So now, what's the problem? When you pour the water out of the tea kettle, even though it's immediately leaving the tea kettle, it's boiling, it is so hot, you pour it on the kid's stomach, you're going to be in big, big trouble. It is boiling hot. It no longer has the ability to cook. It's lost its halachic ability of boiling. It's called a klisheni, which doesn't have the ability to cook other things. And it's now going to be cooked in the kli rishon water. That was a minyan, this pain against what the people are doing. If they're pouring halachically cold water, they're pouring water at 105 degrees into a chilling pot, that's a der ice of belishim. There's nothing to discuss. I don't need Rabbi to tell them that. That's not in bishul hakabishul. That's bishul mamish. But Rabbi Yehudi's chiddush is that even though the water is piping hot, it's boiling hot, since halachically we have left the kli rishon, it's considered to be cold. It's his tremendous chiddush. Once it leaves the kli rishon, according to the Rishon, it's considered to be cold. Once it's cold, you pour it into the pot of chilling. You're cooking the water. So you're cooking halachically cold water, even though it's 180 degrees. It's hard not to remember the famous story. I think I quoted it in last time around. Also, the famous joke about the woman who brings a cup of hot tea to her husband on Friday night, and she spills it on him, so he screams, "Ah, get out, boiling hot!" And she says, "Don't worry, it's a cliche." And he says, "Oh, okay, good." So that's what Rabbi Yehuda said. He looked at the world and said, "Isha halacha," that if the Rishami, state in Rishami, that it's not a kli rishon. Not Kedushan, it's not hot anymore. It comes around and says, you're asking a Kedush, I got the Kedush. You're asking that even the Niyat that's not called a Kedushan, Rabbi Nion is assuming feel all or nothing. If it's a Kedushan, it has the ability to cook other things, that is considered to be cooked itself. But once it's out of the Kedushan status and it can't cook other things, that's tantamount saying it itself is not cooked. That's a Kedush. The Ramot disagrees with that Kedush, that's the Kedush Rabbi Nion. So comes around and says, "I don't understand the Rabbi Yonim is chilav yatsoif." V'lo yadati minay eloy. Says the Rabbi, I know where he came from. Shrei kol shuba b'chamim milfin ha-shabes, shor nosa b'chamim b'shabes, af, apish, utsoinim, gomor. Says the Rabbi, what's he talking about? The water was cooked already. The water, a minute ago, the water was in a kli rishon, and it was 180 degrees in the kli rishon. Now you poured it out, so it's 179 degrees. So now it's halachically based on the Rishalmi. It's considered to be cold. Good, says the Rabbi, says the Rabbi, it's cold. The Rabbi is even different than you were saying. Good, it's cold. But your equation is that it's cold. Asma, what's the difference that it's cold? If I take cold water that was once cooked and I quote unquote recook it, it's kept the gomer. Never learned the Mishnah. So says the Rabbi, that's what Rabbi is talking about. He says he's worried about the water halachically cooled down. Says, forget about halachically cooled down. That's cool. So on the wall, one time we get to let us know, it should be het the gomer. For lo yadati zakturan, hefresh ben bayim uvushol and uvushol achev, et tzorach iyan uvedika. Says you have to, in the iron, big day, can figure out what in the world Rabbi Yehuda is coming from. So we have to analyze this Rabbi Yehuda a little bit better tomorrow and understand what the Nekudas HaMachloikis between Rabbi Yehuda and the Ran is all about. Because this Machloikis is going to shed some light on our original question, what are or are not the exceptions to Ein Bishul HaKadoshim. Again, the starting point of the sugya is the Mishnah Maseches Shabbos. Even though the Mishnah doesn't say the favorite term Ein Bishul HaKadoshim, the Mishnah is clearly illustrating that. Rashi had clearly an exception to that rule. Rashi's Oshtich HaTorah in Hatzmona, clearly the Nitzim of Asher B'Shabbos was suggesting that there was a very real exception to that rule. We weren't sure what the exception was, but we were guessing that it's probably Lach versus Yovish. That seems to make sense to us, logically. And now we found the Machlokes to be in Rana and in Yona as to certain parameters of Ein Bishul HaKadoshim. Let's show for the Mishnah tomorrow why this Machlokes is going to be really a restatement of the Machlokes Rashi and the other Rishonim, and see what this takes us, Halacha L'mayis, in terms of Ein Bishul HaKadoshim. This is when we're done the Lach.